やめてたまるか。お前と俺は売れたからさ。
一生かけた
一度の絆、
心配するな、
泣
いてだけの最高だって。ずっといつまでも、ずっといつまでも殴り合って、けなし合いて、たちがいるな。
Welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the BKB here at WrestlingObserver.com, F4WOnline.com, and we have a double packed show this week. And our first guest is one of my favorite champions in all of wrestling right now. He is one half of the Open the Twin Gate Tag Team Champions in Dragon Gate with his partner, his lookalike, Seema. We have the future of flight, Ricochet, back on the show. Ricochet, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Now, you were last on this show in, I believe it was September of 2010, last year, so about 10 months ago, and it was just prior to your first tour of Dragon Gate, and almost a year on, several tours under your name, and you've become quite the amazing wrestler in the last few months, and I think it's fair to say you've grown quite a bit. And how do you feel the last year has gone for you overall?
I wouldn't say I'm technically a good wrestler. I'm still learning. I have a lot of work. But I feel like I've been pretty good, actually. I really can't complain. I mean, things have finally been looking up. I really can't complain. It's been pretty good to me.
Now, before you went over for your first tour, of course, kind of set up from being a part of DGUSA and having great matches there, and you obviously caught the eye of the Dragon Gate guys, so they decided to bring you over. Before you first went over, kind of what were your expectations? And then when you first went over, how was it different to what you were expecting, or was it the same?
It was about what I expected. Cause, you know, I watched a lot of the Dragon Gate stuff at Auditorium on back in the day. But myself, I really wasn't expecting to be over there this long. I was expecting like one tour, and then like I even told people where I live, like keep my job opening, like my real job, because like, I assumed I would be back. And then I guess things just went really well, and I don't know. It turned out, I guess, like wrestling wise, it's exactly what I expected, but I don't know, just I didn't expect to actually have been kept, you know, and have so much done, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and if you could really sort of pinpoint to any reason as to why you think they've took such a shine to you and decided to keep bringing you over so much, would you have any idea what it might be? Is it just maybe
I just do stupid flips that they like to see.
I think
guy does dumb flips. Let's see him do them all the time.
I think it might be a little bit more than that, to be honest. But
I'm not sure.
One man who's definitely taken a shine to you is your tag team partner, Seema, and he's pretty much, not only have you taken on sort of aspects of his appearance and character, but he's paid you the tribute of taking on some of yours with the mohawk he's rocking recently. And
He was really excited about that for some reason. He was like, he was really excited about having like double mohawks for that last show we did.
Yeah.
And I was like, he was like, maybe I cut my hair like yours. And I started kidding at first, and then he was really serious about it.
Now, you've been pretty much under his wing since you started. Of course, like you joined the Warriors when you first went over there, kind of like a babyface fan favorite type group. And then you kind of went with Seema in this new direction, forming the Blood Warriors. And you've been under his wing pretty much the whole time. And now you're teaming with him as half the Twin Gate champs. And what's it like working so closely with Seema and having him kind of, I guess, as a mentor? Or the key kind of the best things he's taught you since you've kind of been in that role with him?
It's a crazy experience. It's, like I said, I'm just used to watching these guys, you know, on the TV, and now like I'm like actually seeing them, you know, like and wrestling with them. It's just crazy, and like he's really taught me a lot about like just my, like, my presence, my overall presence, you know, it's hard to explain, just the overall mannerisms and just presence when you're, you know, out there in the ring, you know. Tell me a lot about that, and that's a lot what I need to know, really. Like, I mean, I can, you know, do all the dumb flips you want, but I don't know, just something about being in the ring and being more comfortable in the ring, you know.
Yeah, you can see it even just like in your ring entrances when you guys are coming into the ring, and Simo is always sort of notorious for getting sort of right up into the camera and just saying something to the camera and making mannerisms.
Yeah.
And now I see you doing that all the time, and it's like it's just like it's a page out of his book, and it's really cool to see. And
in a way, like, it's kind of just me kind of being myself too. Like, I finally, you know, kind of get to be myself, and I don't know, it's a little more easy. Like, he's kind of just showing me it's okay. I don't know.
And your first, I think it was at the end of your first tour over there. You might have been your second tour, but this was really your first really big pay-per-view show. It was Final Gate in December of last year, and you guys won.
Yeah.
It was you, Seema, and Dragon Kid won the Triangle Gate Championships at that point, and you got the win with the double moonsault, and it was kind of one of the first times you busted out in Japan in front of a huge crowd, probably like 7,000-8,000 people, and just it got over huge, and it was a big moment, and like, that must have been quite the experience at that point in time.
Yeah, it was a crazy experience. I don't even know how to describe it, because I don't know. We were talking, and I don't know. It's because that was like my first like really big show. Like, you know, like, I think there was like over like 7,000 people there. I don't remember, but I've never been in front of that many people at, you know, at once. Like. And just after I hit the double moonsault, and I don't know, I was just so happy. I was like, man, this is a crazy experience, you know, just like a dream, really, you know. It's just really indescribable, honestly, for me at least.
And how did that compare, like, on a big show like that to, I think you might have made your debut at a Corkin show, which, from a fan point of view, I love watching Cork in all shows because you've just got the great atmosphere of the crowd and everything like that, and it's just a really cool atmosphere. And like, how does it compare working a sort of smaller Cork in show, which is still a big show for Dragon Gate, where they do a lot of kind of big matches, compared to the pay-per-view shows in front of the much bigger crowds that may not have the sort of intense kind of atmosphere that the Cork in has? How do you feel they compare?
Well, for me, like, a Corkin show, it's like the same as like a big show, because to me, like, a Corkin show, I guess, it is really important for me. So, like, I give it, I guess, like, the same, I still give it, you know, the same amount as a Corkin show as I would like the huge big shows, because to me, like, Corkin's like, you know, it's legendary, you know. It's still a really big venue for me, and I don't know. I'm just always going to do my best on that Corkin. The Corkin to me is kind of like the ECW arena in Philly in America, but in Japan, you know.
Absolutely,
it's been around for so long and seen so much stuff, like so much history there.
For sure. And did you get to sign your name on the wall in Corkin yet?
You know, I keep putting it off. I'm a big procrastinator, and like, I don't ever have like a black marker. I'm like, I every time I see it, I see all these names. I'm like, man, I gotta sign my name on that wall. I keep putting it off. I really need to do that soon.
You need to sign it next to Chuck Taylor, I think, just for the link there.
But yeah, I keep putting it off for some reason.
one of the big matches you've had at Corkin was, of course, the singles match with Pac. And a lot of people really raved about that match when it aired on the TV. And how did you feel that went? And what are your thoughts of Pac as an opponent, since you wrestled him quite a bit in 2011?
Yeah. I mean, there's no denying it. He's so good. He's one of the best. Like, he's by far the best high flyer in the business today. Like, there's really no, like, argument about it.
High praise.
Huh?
High praise.
Like, but, he's really good, and I've learned a lot from him, actually, a whole lot, really. And, like, I don't know, being, like, I've wrestled him so much, like, in such a short span, like, they're just like comfortable like wrestling with him. If that makes sense, you know.
How did you feel that match went at Corrigan?
That match, people liked it. I honestly thought I could have been a lot better, but people liked it. So I can't really bash on it too hard if, you know, everyone seems to like it.
And you had a rematch of them, Hakata Star Lanes, which I don't think people have seen yet. I think it was aired on the TV in Japan. But how did that go compared to the Corkin one?
I think that match was a lot better than the Corkin match. I think just everything went, a lot more smoothly. And I don't know, the transitions and stuff. I just think everything, I think that match was a little bit better than the Corkin match. I hope that it comes out soon, because I haven't seen it yet either. I hope it comes out somewhere soon so I can see it. I really would like to view it.
Yeah, and let's hope it's not edited too much by the fine folks at Gayora.
Our first Corkin match was edited quite a lot. It was like, I think the edited version was like maybe under 9 minutes or something.
Yeah, I think it was at 9-10 minutes.
But we went like 17 minutes in that match.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
yeah, we went a while. Like, we went like 16:48 or something like that.
Yeah, I think the Hakata match is on the same show as like the Mochizuki title defense and maybe a Twin Gate match. So it's crossing fingers that they'll give it some time on the episode. So let's talk a bit about some of the other things you've done in the last few months over there. One of the guys who I've seen you in a couple of matches with recently, who's recently come back himself, is Shingo, and I was amazed at the chemistry you guys had right off the bat. And what was it like wrestling him? And is he a guy you'd like to kind of get in the ring with a lot more in the future?
At first, I was kind of scared. I was like, man, this guy hits really, really hard. I was like, oh man. But he's really good too. Like, all them guys are good. But I mean, like, Shingo, he's really good. Like, everything he does, like, I was like, oh, this is gonna hurt. I mean, it hurt a little bit because, I mean, he's just a hard hitting guy, but it wasn't near as bad as I thought it was. And he's really good, and I really hope we cross paths one day. I'll beat him up again.
Yeah, I think a Twin Gate defense against maybe Shingo and Yamato or something like that might be quite the doozy of a match. But I suppose. I'd have to ask, who'd be your favorite opponent over there? Would it be Pac, or is it someone we haven't mentioned?
Favorite opponent over there? I don't know. I really like working with the Dragon Kid.
Really, of course, like you were teaming with Dragon Kid for quite a while, and then he was kicked out of the Blood Warriors, and now you've got to wrestle him quite a bit in recent
times. Booted him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe him. Yoshino's, he's a good opponent, too. I like... That's my old kid. I like working with Yoshino. But maybe Kid. And of course it's Pac too, but maybe Kid.
Someone you didn't mention as a favorite opponent is one Masaki Mochizuki. And I've heard from Kevin Steen and other people that those kicks, they're not that fun.
Those kicks are not that fun. That is true. Those kicks. Wow. Yeah, those... Let's just say he lays him in there, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I've heard he's quite...
He's not afraid to kick you, that's for sure.
I've heard he's quite the animal when it comes to training before the show and warming up.
Oh, yeah.
Any stories maybe about that or any of the guys kind of as far as that kind of stuff?
Actually, there is a story. We were stretching in the ring, and we've seen Rich Swann stretching, and, like, he wasn't really good at stretching. Like, he could barely, like, stretch at all, you know? And so, like, Mochizuki and Dragon Kid are, like, you know, doing splits almost. And so we went over to Rich Swann, and, like, we put him up against the wall, and, like, we had his feet almost all the way spread out, and he was, like, screaming.
Oh, no.
Putting his legs down, like, we're like, every day, you must do this every day. And he's, like, screaming, and he's like, no! It was just really funny. Like, Mochi and Kid are just, like, stretching him out.
Oh, God.
Like, he was like, I can barely walk. It was funny, though.
I bet the singing to the ring was a little higher notes that night.
Yeah.
Did you, you were in the ring for it at, I'm going to go into the Kobe World Show in a bit, but Rich Swann's rap versus KZ in front of 10,000 people at Kobe World Hall was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And you were in the ring for that, and how cool was that?
It was really cool because they actually had a rap battle before at Cork, and poor Swan, poor guy, like he kind of choked a little bit. It was like, oh man. But so like we were at Kobe World, there's so much more people. And I was just like, man, I hope he nails it. And sure enough, he did. It was crazy. Sima loved it, but I don't know. It was crazy. I'm glad he nailed it.
Yeah, and he's a guy that just like one tour over there, or it's been the extended tour, but he's gotten so much better since he went over.
He's gotten a lot better, yeah. Like I can definitely notice the difference.
And now you've got Aor Fox gone over, and
I hope he's doing good. I read results and stuff about him, and I hope he's doing good over there.
Yeah, I can see he's a guy with so much potential that he could end up coming back from that tour and improving loads as well. And it seems to be that's what happens with everyone, and you're no exception either. Like the improvement that everyone talks about with Ricochet, it's crazy when you come back for like a PWG show or a DGUSA show, and then people haven't seen you in a while, and they're like, "Oh my God, Ricochet's gotten so much better like every time."
I don't know. That's just weird to me because I watch stuff, like I watch my matches and stuff, and I look back and I'm like, you know, some things I'm like, okay, that was pretty good, but most of it I'm just like, I just need so much work more. So like at PWG a couple weekends ago, it was like me and Generico versus Roderick Strong and Alex Shelley, and just me watching all these guys in this match, like they're all just so good, and I'm like, I just need so much more work. I don't know. It's just weird to like seeing people be like, you know, like telling me like good things, I guess. Because I watch it and I'm like, I just don't see it. But,
Well, they say that, like, Eddie Guerrero always found himself to not be good when he watched himself. So if that's
Eddie Guerrero,
if you're taking traits from Eddie Guerrero, that's not exactly a bad thing. Someone who I always ask wrestlers who've been over in Dragon Gate about is Stalker Ichikawa. And they always have a funny story or two about Stalker and the crazy things he'd do to top the other wrestlers. And got any good Stalker memories for us?
Stalker Ichikawa. Yes, actually. I got one that vaguely sticks out in my mind. We were at Gifu, actually, his hometown, Gifu. And it was like before the ring and before the show. And we were all, like, in the ring. And, like, I was actually practicing my breakdancing at the time because I was in Japan by myself because all the other foreigners were, like, gone. So it was just, like, me by myself. So we're at the show, and I'm, like, practicing my breakdancing. And then I hear them all, like, laughing. I'm like, what? So I look in the ring, and, like, you have Super Shinlong, like, you know, in the ring. And you have Stalker Ichikawa, who's apparently butt naked except for his shoes. And they're making Ichikawa give Super Shinlong head scissors over and over.
Oh, no.
And he's butt naked. it was so funny. Of course, like, they're all, like, watching because they think it's funny. And I'm like, this is gross. But it was super funny. I mean, it was so funny. Like, he was just butt naked giving them head scissors. It was,
Super Shedlog, there's a guy who is, he's had a rough road to go down.
He's had a rough road.
yeah. As far as like being over there and the training and all that, who are the guys you kind of get to work with in the gym as far as like improving your skills? Who's really helped you from sort of technical aspects like that?
Like I said, like, In the ring, like, I kind of, like, talk and, like, work with Pac a lot. Like, he, like, teaches me, like, a lot of things, like, to do, like, my, like, wrestling side. Like, he's really taught me a lot. Like, he really has. And, like, he's taught me a lot about, like, the wrestling technical side. Like I said, Shima's taught me a lot about, like, you know, the body language and the mannerisms, you know. And, but that's about, like, and, like, when I go to the gym to work out, it was usually me and Pac, like, and he's super jacked, you know, and like he just kind of helped me push to that next level, you know.
And
I have to give them a lot of credit.
How long did it take for you to start understanding Pac's accent?
When, like, he says he has to like dumb down his vocabulary to like speak like, I guess, American English, because I was like, no, don't do that. I was like, just speak your natural, you know, native tongue, like
the Geordie accent.
Yeah, and he started speaking it. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck you're saying. I don't know what you're talking about.
My favorite football or soccer team is Newcastle, where he's from. So I've been hearing I've been hearing people with that accent since I was like 5 years old, and it's odd for me to have a star wrestler from Newcastle, but I'd say it's quite cool to be able to train with a guy like him, and who, as you said, is absolutely jacked, and I'm sure he knows quite a bit about his way around the gym to have got himself in that kind of shape. Do you guys train at the mid breath gym that we've heard so much about over the years?
Actually, yeah, we have trained a couple times. That's a really good gym, man. That's really good.
I haven't
got me a shirt yet. I want a shirt. But.
Have you seen the dog that runs around the gym all the time?
No.
I've seen some great photos of the various Dragon Gate wrestlers with the mid-breath dog, who will often be fitted out in some fine clothing accessories itself, but. Let's get on to the show I mentioned earlier. Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival. It just happened a couple of weeks ago, and it was honestly perhaps my favorite Dragon Gate show ever. I thought it was just as big of a home run as you could get. And I think the Twin Gate match where you and Seema won the belts was the match that stole the show. And how did you feel that match went? And what was it like being in there in front of 10,000 people? Just putting on the show that you guys put on in that match. It was, of course, yourself and Seema against Pac and Dragon Kid.
After the match was done, like, I was like, man, like, I really was disappointed. I really didn't like it at all.
Wow.
I was really disappointed about it. I don't know. I just, I felt like I was sloppy, and I just felt like, I don't know. I just felt like I was sloppy, and I felt like it was kind of slow. And I went back and watched it, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. It was an okay match. I don't think it was. I think the best match of the night, I think, was Tozawa and Shingo. I think they stole the show, but
yeah, that was a hell of a match, and the main event as well was really good.
The main event was really good. So yeah, I think Tozawa and Shingo stole the show. But I think we had a decent little match. I think it was good.
to say the least, it was a decent little match, and you got to come out rocking Seema's sunglasses. Both you
the glasses,
matching,
yeah.
Sunglasses.
That was he actually gave me those glasses like maybe 10 minutes before it went out. He was like, "Here," I'm like, "Oh, I thought he just wanted me to hold them." And then, like, he had his own glasses. He was like, "Well, where are the glasses?" I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I put the glasses on, and they were kind of messing the mohawk up. I'm like, "Oh no," because his mohawk, like, it's like so short in the back, like. It wasn't really touching it.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of took them off a little soon, but I really wanted to wear them, so maybe I'll get my mohawk cut up to where the glasses can fit.
They should get specially fitted glasses for the mohawk. But you took a move in that match, which I think people need to see to believe, a Ultra Hurricanrana from Dragon Kid, which was, he's done that move to, I don't know how many great wrestlers over the years, but I have never seen anyone take that move like you did on that night. And it got perhaps the biggest near fall of the whole show. The crowd went nuts. I know you said you were kind of disappointed in the match, but that must have just been a pretty special moment hearing the reaction to that.
It definitely was. There was two in that match that I can recall that were really like cool to me. Like the Dragonrana was one of them. Like, I thought, like, I was watching a bunch of people take it, like, Susumu, Yokosuka, like, he takes it really well a lot. So I was, like, watching a bunch of people take it, and then I watched the way I took it, and I was like, wow! Because it didn't feel like that at first, I guess. And then I watched it back, and I was like, wow! But that one, and when he gave me the Frankensteiner from the top rope, and, like, I front flipped out of it.
Yes.
Because apparently, I guess that's never been done before.
Yeah, that was pretty.
But And then, like during the match, I was kind of bummed because I didn't really hear a reaction or anything. But then going back and watching it, like, after I landed my feet, like, I can hear the crowd, and it was, I don't know, it was, like, they were like, oh, so, like, and then it felt pretty good.
Yeah, that was one of many great moments in that match. Pac was amazing. Cena was amazing. It was ridiculous. But, yeah, so that show, would you say, I know you weren't super happy with the match, but overall as a show and being part of such a big show, would you rank that amongst any of your career highlights?
Definitely. Overall, that whole show was fantastic, I think. A good show, start to finish. But, it was a good show, and it was definitely one of my major, I guess, highlights in my career. Definitely.
So what's the plan for the future? You're back in America at the moment. You just did PWG. When are you headed back to Japan and to defend your titles?
I'm actually home for quite some time. I don't leave until like September, like after the DGUSA shows in September. So I'm actually home for a pretty good time.
And DGUSA, there's some stacked shows that you're doing a series with Pac, I believe. I don't have the matches in front of me, but it's going to be, I think, a singles match, a tag match, and a trios match. Is that correct?
I think so. A singles match, yeah.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, the trios is Pac, A.R. Fox, and Rich Swann against yourself, Seema, and Tozawa, which is a mind-blowing tag. I'm not sure which of the towns or cities that's in, but whoever it is, they're in for a treat that night. And of course,
I didn't even know the match. That was the first time I ever actually heard what the match was.
Jeez, Gabe, come on, tell your wrestlers who they're wrestling.
Just like when I'm home, like unless I'm at a show, I really don't like. I guess I kind of look up wrestling, but I really don't like. When I'm at home, it's just like me and my boys and my family, and we're just kind of all kicking it.
Yeah, you got to get back to that kind of stuff every now and then.
Yeah.
Just kind of, especially when you're going over to Dragon Gate when it's pretty much nothing but wrestling. It's like nonstop wrestling,
yeah.
Or being around wrestlers or doing wrestling or training for wrestling just 24/7. So it must be nice to kind of get back to see your family and friends from outside of wrestling.
Yeah.
But you obviously, I'm sure, enjoy getting back to American culture after having been over in Japan, which is quite different for culture-wise. So what was the Japanese culture like, and how did you take to it? Because you hear some people who go over there and just after a week, they need to get home. But obviously, with you staying over there a bit longer, I'm sure you have a bit more tolerance for it.
Yeah, actually, luckily for me, like, all the wrestlers and all the guys, they make it better than it should be, really. Like, I mean, they help out a whole lot, make me feel comfortable and, you know, like, just making it an all-around, like, good experience for me, like, so, like, luckily, I got all them to help me out, and, like, and luckily, like, I'm not really a picky eater. I used to be a really picky eater, but luckily, and, like, just all the food, I actually like it a whole lot, from, like, just the little meals you get at a convenience store, or, like, sushi, or, the only thing I'm really not keen to is, the octopus. Other than that, I'm pretty good. I got it pretty good over there. I can't do any complaining about it over there.
What about Japanese TV? Do you ever see any of the crazy like game shows with all the flashing lights and all that stuff?
I see a lot of it. I don't know what they're talking about, but I'm assuming it's funny because like I kind of laugh watching it, like not knowing what they're saying. So if I could understand what they're saying, I bet it would be a lot more funny than me. But yeah, I don't watch a lot of it, but I see it on a lot.
Have you gotten to, while you've been over there, have you gotten to go to any other wrestling company shows, be it big shows, small shows, anything like that?
No, not yet. I hear about some of the other wrestlers going to other companies, but I haven't yet, no.
Yeah, something for the future, I suppose. And Ricochet, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show here today. And if you've any plugs to get out there, stuff you've got coming up, anything you're selling, let the people know.
Actually, I think I'm in the process of getting T-shirts made, it's been far too long because I'm cheap and broke. But I think I'm in the process of getting T-shirts made. I think one of my friends has a design for me. We're going to try to get done.
That's pretty cool. And where will people be able to pick them up when they're at?
Yeah, everybody, look out for them shirts real soon. I hope at least.
Very cool. And any shows coming up or?
I actually have a show in Indianapolis for IPW, Infinity Pro Wrestling, on August 20th. So if anybody is close to that area, or if you're not close to that area and you want to go watch it, August 20th, Indianapolis, Indiana, Infinity Pro Wrestling. And other than that, I got the DGUSA show in September.
Yeah, all the info on them is at DGUSA.tv. And you can find Ricochet at Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? It's like underscore Rico88 underscore?
Underscore Rico88 underscore.
Perfect.
Because Ricochet was taken.
Very good. Well, as I said, it's a pleasure having you on, and best of luck and continued success in Dragon Gate.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you very much. I hope to speak to you again in the future.
I'm sure you will. Thanks a million, buddy, and everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned. And welcome everyone back, I think, to Dr. Keith Presents, depending on whether this is the first segment or the closing segment of the show this week. You've either just heard an awesome interview with Ricochet, or you're about to hear an awesome interview with Ricochet. But before that, or after that, we've got another awesome person who can also, I'm told, do a double moonsault, Justin Shapiro. Justin, how are you, sir?
I'm excited. Deeply disappointing interview with me coming up or having taken place.
We've got Justin on here because Justin recently attended a wrestling event. And I don't think we've gotten Justin's live impressions on a wrestling show. We got his live impressions on the Super Bowl, but not on a wrestling show since we started having him on this show. And I was a great fan of the show back in the day. I don't think it was his first ever episode of Joe vs. the World, but one of his early episodes where he reviewed a Raw house show that he was at, which uncovered such gems as the Triple H mooning, and there was something else. Something
it was the death of Lillian Garcia.
Oh, it was, right. And there was something about some family doing something funny that were near you, or something that was good. Go pick that out, Joe vs. the World archives, everyone, and listen to that one. It was really good. But Justin, you were at a SmackDown house show in recent times. Week ago? 2 weeks ago? How recent?
It was 1 week ago.
Okay.
Under
in
Saturday.
The Pittsburgh area, I would assume?
The immediate Pittsburgh area.
Nice.
Pittsburgh.
So, how about the floor is yours. Give us the lowdown here, and I'll jump in with thoughts and questions as you go.
Thank you. Well, the floor was also empty. This show was very sparsely attended. I think that's the going rate for SmackDown, is for its non-televised shows to be not doing very well at all. But it was still pretty jarring, because, you surely don't follow the Pittsburgh Penguins hockey organization, but they have a new arena, which is...
I was trying so hard to try to name a player there. If you gave me time enough, I'd probably be able to think of one. Because I do know some hockey players, but... there's one guy that Philadelphia. Danny Briere, is he Philadelphia, or is he...
He sure is. He's a little elf.
Yeah.
He's a fist pumping little.
I believe any sportsman called Danny has to be a little Danny Woodhead, new NFL season, all excited. Woo!
Huzzah. Fat Albert.
Fat Albert and Ocho.
Alan is excited about that.
Ocho Cinco. I can't believe it. It's like just hilarious, and it's going to be good. Yeah, but anyway.
Oh, right. Well, so, like, they're a popular team. They got some charismatic young stars that are drawing big houses.
Oh, wait, they've got Sidney Crosby.
Yes, they do.
Duh, stupid Alan.
Ding. Good work, Alan. So, but yeah, their sellout streak goes back to, like, late 2006 for their hockey games. And then, like, whenever WWE does TV, they just tarp off the areas where people aren't, so it looks nice and not depressing. So this was like just the immediate areas surrounding the ring were filled, and then the rest was just this dark abyss. So I felt kind of bad for the guys, but you know, that's their job. They go to these sparsely populated buildings and they do their matches. But it was still weird to it's not the same aesthetic as, like, indie guys doing this in front of 100 people, but it's weird. It's weird to think about them living that life perpetually. But then we moved on, and we got it started, like the proverbial peas of black eye. I feel like to have a conversation, I need to pause, and then you say things like, curious. And then, my good man, what occurred?
I was trying to think of something funny Black Eyed Peas related to say, and it wasn't popping into my head, so.
So, no need.
She has a face like a spatula.
Good work.
Thank you.
I have no segue. And the first match was a battle royal, an angle-laden battle royal. Took a lot of guys worked twice, and then it seemed like this was the match to get, like, Trent Beretta his payoff and a few other guys. I wanted to see Gabriel and Slater wrestle, because I know we've talked about enjoying their work, so it would have been fun to see them in that house show atmosphere where you get a lot of time.
They just threw those guys in a battle royal?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
That really blows.
The Battle Royal was like it was a Battle Royal to determine the number one contender to the Intercontinental title for a match later that evening.
Yeah.
And it had, like, D. Bryan, Mark Henry, Sheamus, Wade, etc., and then rounded out with, like, the lesser lights.
But did those guys all come back and work again, like Sheamus and Danielson?
Yeah, the pushed guys did. The Trents did not.
I'm surprised they didn't just throw on an Usos versus Heath and Justin tag on there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what part of the reason I wanted to see this. Like, I haven't gone to a house show in 7 years or so, just because I stopped seeing the point. But this one was advertising Bret Hart, which I thought was, like, interesting. Thought, you know, when will I ever see Bret Hart live again? Not alive again, in person again. And I was like, well, you know, Christian is in the main event. That's cool. And I thought there'd be a good long Danielson match. That didn't actually happen. But so I thought it'd be cool to see some of those guys work, but the ones I wanted to see didn't. But there was good wrestling on this show.
Were the Usos in the Battle Royal, or did they have a match?
Usos were in the Battle Royal. Tyson Kidd, although he wrestled again. Jinder Mahal. Great Khali was not in the Battle Royal. Mark Henry, I got excited because everyone was going to give him the earthquake treatment when he came in the ring. Everyone was like, hey, conspiracy, conspiring a plan. And Mark Henry was looking around like, this better not be a plan against me, the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. And then everybody attacked him, but they couldn't get him over the top rope and have both feet touch the floor. So they shot, like, angles for matches later. Wade and Sheamus went over the top rope and brawled to the back in a heated encounter.
I bet. Those Irish and the English don't like each other.
And your boys, the Usos, worked a cool spot where they tried to double Irish whip the world's strongest man, Mark Henry, but then he pulled them back in the opposite direction and they flew over the top rope.
Oh, nice.
And then just basic battle royal stuff. I was hoping, like, Yoshitatsu would be on the show, because I kind of lost track of what brand he was on because of NXT. So I thought he might work with Tyson, but he was not there.
He's my SmackDown. He should have been on there.
Is he? Yeah. Okay, I thought so. And then Cody Rhodes wasn't on the show. I don't know why. He just may have had the weekend off or something. Mm. Yeah. So
weekend off to bang Layla. Not a bad weekend.
She's laid up, isn't she?
She is.
That? Isn't that rape? If someone wasn't...
I don't know. We should
No, it's simply fetish.
Does he wear a mask while...
Yes, do you think he makes her wear a bag over her head?
Servants, get my bag.
Do you think when Cody Rhodes has sex, he says, whoa, at the point of
I would. I could only hope so.
Yeah, so anyway, I think it came down to, like, D. Bryan, Mark Henry, and Ted. And then Danielson did the old pull the rope down Olay thing when the big fat guy's running at him, and he eliminated Mark Henry, who kicked many a step in disgust over this. And then Ted snuck up from behind and dumped Bryan to get the title shot.
Good for Ted.
Yes. Now, did I read that, like, I don't follow House Show Reports. I stop reading the Observer once I get to the WWE House Show results.
As do I.
So, but I thought I read somewhere that Bryan had been working with Zeke to teach him how to work a little bit, but I don't know if that's...
I didn't see that, but I don't read it too much of that.
Yeah, but I mean, Ted and Zeke have gotten acquainted with each other, so... yeah, so he got the shot, and he was like, I'm going to win this belt tonight in front of you few people. Just you watch. Then, immediately after that, to come down from that experience, Caitlin came out as the host of the show.
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah. And I immediately tensed up, because Caitlin is my nemesis. I really don't care for her. She has Christy Hemme heat with me.
Ooh. Ashley Massaro's heat.
I voted for Ashley. Well, I think I... No, I didn't actually vote for anybody. But I endorsed Ashley to win in a Sunday Night Heat report. So, may have made the difference. But I gotta say, like, she did pretty good because, you know, you're just sending someone out there. And, like, Maria used to do a good job with that, of just, like, walking out and being like, hey, party people, having a good time.
Oh, no, stop. Oh, God. No, stars and chicks or whatever she said.
Yeah.
Oh, what was the line? Now I have to think. It was the, nothing annoyed me. Stars and studs. Oh.
Yes.
God. God, I hate Maria. Seriously, no, like, when Maria opens her mouth and speaks, I want to punch her. When she doesn't, I'm perfectly cool with her. No, I should say that again. When she speaks and she's doing her gimmick voice and everything, totally fine with it. She kind of comes off as, like, adorable ditz, and it's fine. When she speaks in her normal voice, it's the most just anger-inducing thing in the world. Yo, what's up, stars and studs? Oh, God.
Her
shoot
interview voice, where she'd just be like, yeah, dude, what's up? I'm a rock star.
No, you're not. You're a bitch.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was uncalled for. That was totally uncalled for.
She still really likes CM Punk. I wonder how she feels about all this stuff.
I wonder how the Hardys feel about all this stuff. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, they must be feeling pretty shitty about things. Like, I bet Matt is having the biggest sulk right now.
Lonely Hearts Club get together?
Oh, maybe.
Curse them and Amy Dumas.
Light fire to lead a the thing he had. The life-size... What's the
cardboard cutout?
Cutout, that's it. Sorry. It's been a long day.
It's okay, Alan. I'm here to accommodate you.
I'm on holidays, though. Woo! 9 days off.
Congratulations. What is it? Irish famine anniversary?
Annual leave.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I normally take it in June, but for various reasons, it's August this year.
I heard from the filmmaker Michael Moore that that's a very helpful thing to your well-being. Annual leave.
What? You don't get annual leave in America?
Not really, no.
Wow. I got 22 days starting off, and the more years I work in the company, it goes up.
My God, in a certain amount of time, you get to take the whole year off.
That's the goal.
Just peace out. Find yourself. Anyway, I thought Caitlin actually did a good job just basically going out and speaking off the cuff. And she promised valuable prizes to the WWE Universe and the opportunity to go backstage and meet WWE superstars. And then she tried to start giving away these prizes, and she was interrupted by mean women in the form of Tamina and Rosa Mendez.
The gang.
Yep. Favorite Fox was not on this show either.
Rosa's army.
Absolutely. The mendacious bunch. So they came out and bullied her and were like, what are you giving away prizes? No way. These people do not deserve. And Caitlin's like, whoa, hey. So Natalya and AJ ran out and made the save. Unfortunately, it was to Natalya's music and not AJ's music.
Very disappointing.
So that set up an impromptu bout between these guys. And it made me kind of understand what all the girls say when they're like, we only get 2 minutes, do you? No wonder we suck, right? We don't get to... Because, you know, they weren't good, but they actually got to have a real, like, match that made sense from the beginning to the end, where it was like, oh, no, I hope she gets out of this situation. And then she did.
What's Tamina like? Is she... She's athletic. Like, you'd think she'd be somewhat capable in the ring.
Yeah, she
I've never noticed her to be really horrible. So she must
be... She's strong, and she can get hit. So she and Natalya worked the bulk of the match.
I remember she did a sweet Superfly Splash back when her and the Usos debuted.
Yeah, yeah. She was a... She's... I don't know. There's such a sliding scale of, like, female work, but they're good enough. But I thought, like, Rosa was the unsung hero because she's horrible, but she's an awesome, awesome stooge. Like, she has some Layla capabilities as far as, like, being a big ham in the ring.
Big ham.
So, maybe my favorite part of the whole show was when AJ began the match with Rosa, and AJ is very small. And so they stood face to face, and then Rosa cruelly shoved her on her behind. And then she turned to the crowd and did a big... hand on hips laugh, and then said, he's just a little baby. And then she made the wah, wah, wah pantomime where you're like, I'm crying tears. But then as this was going on, AJ crawled to the corner and turned in, tagged in Natalya, and then Natalya was waiting for Rosa when she turned around. And Rosa scurried to her corner and hugged Tamina.
Oh, the old hug around the waist.
Mm-hmm.
I love that spot. Oh my God, the Tamina and Rose Mendez are the new Hollywood Blondes. Brilliant.
Absolutely they are.
Fantastic.
So if we have the Bellisota Wrecking Crew, then
do you know who the best team ever at that spot was? The Hugger and the Way spot.
Mm-mm.
The short-lived half right. The short-lived tag team on WCW early 1998: Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero.
Yes. Yes.
Fucking money team right there. If people haven't seen their matches as a tag team, it's just after Jericho turned heel and before he was full blown doing the character where he was stealing people's stuff and getting his collection, and before the Malenko feud, and he had just turned heel, and him and Eddie had the greatest stooge heel team ever.
Yeah, they would be like, oh no, Dean Malenko and Benoit are throttling us too bad.
Yeah.
How will we ever survive that?
Yep.
Moving on.
So, yeah, the women's match.
Yeah, I think Natalya won with the sharpshooter. Like an actually a sequence with some thought put into it where she ended up being like, aha, your legs! And now a sharpshooter, madam.
Yeah, Natalya and Alicia Fox did some crazy shit. They had, like, the stiffest match in WWE TV I've seen in a long-ass time. Even stiffer than Sheamus and Wade Barrett. They had, everyone thought Sheamus and Wade Barrett had a stiff match this week. They weren't. They didn't even have the stiffest match in the tapings. Alicia Fox and Natalya did. And they had a finish, which, like, Natalya did this funky shit to get into a sharpshooter. I can't even remember. But she's getting her into it, and then Alicia does even funkier thing to, like, cradle her up, and it was cool. But anyway, next match on the card.
Next match was Jinder Mahal squashing Tyson Kidd.
Oh, heel versus heel.
Yeah, Tyson Kidd working as an undersized underdog. Maybe.
Did they actually have a proper match, considering on TV Jinder hasn't been having proper matches? He's just been...
They did. They had a longer match, and Tyson went through his comeback and
okay.
Whatnot. It wasn't very smooth, though. Mr. Mahal is not really the best guy to work with a high-flying, or really anyone, maybe.
What does he look like in person? Does he come across as a really big guy, or...?
Not a lot of giants on this show, so it's kind of hard to tell, like, besides Sheamus and Barrett. So he was about... He stood out in that he was bigger than most people, and he's still maintaining his physique since he's been on the road. But no, he didn't look very good. I understand, like, these are the shows where they should have long matches and learn, but I don't know, he seems to have a long way. Him, like, Tyson running around and, like, waiting for him to get in position kind of reminded me of the, London and Kendrick versus Deuce and Domino matches I saw a few years ago. So, yeah, and Great Khali seconded Mahal, and he did not do anything. He came out, he stood there, he scratched his chin and was like, match. And then he didn't like lead to the finish. He just watched his man Mahal win, and then he got in the ring and did his roar pose. And that was it. So, not bad work if you can get it. He still didn't wear a shirt. He wore his Khali pants and just hung out.
Good for him. He needs a t-shirt.
Yeah.
The Great Khali says.
Great Khali says.
Yes. So, that was third match, so fourth match on the card.
Yes. Well, on his way back, thwarted hero Tyson Kidd was jumped by Wade Barrett and beat up for heat. So, really valiant night for this heel, Tyson Kidd. So, Wade jumped him in the aisle and then, like, threw him into the rail and such, and Tyson was like, man, this is bad karma for what I did to that action figure, maybe. So then Wade did.
They had a Yoshi's figure's leg on a pole match this week on NXT.
Isn't NXT beautiful? I started watching it again when D. Bates came back.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch this week's episode, maybe when I finish this recording.
It's the payoff to the Hornswoggle love triangle. Have you heard about that?
I saw a screen cap, or a bit of a screen cap, which made me think I've seen it, but I'm not going to read into it. I'll just watch it unfold.
Well, it's fitting, because as Rosamunda says, he's just a little baby.
What was I going to say? I can't remember. All right, go ahead.
About Wade or Tyson Kidd?
I think it was. Brett. Was Brett not there to endorse Tyson?
Nope. Yeah, I thought, like, this would be a big night for Natalya and Tyson with him there, and I'm sure it was, except for the wrestling parts. But no, he didn't do anything.
I'm sure it's just they're over it at this stage. It's like, he's been there so much, it's like, hey, Brett, hey, dude. Yeah, you were awesome. Yeah, 91 SummerSlam. Yeah, that was cool, yeah. Alright, I'm just gonna go over and get a soda here. I'll see you later.
Alright. Okay, settle your tea kettle. Alright, bye. I presume she ends
just I've started using that in real life.
Really? Does it work?
Sell your teal cow. No, it doesn't work at all.
Oh.
People always look at me odd when I say it.
Is it when people are getting wound up and you're like, hey?
I use it randomly.
Okay.
Often in poor context.
Because if someone's getting agitated and you told them that, it might diffuse the situation.
Yeah.
Like, sell your tea.
I do need to settle my tea kettle, that's true. Anyway, Wade Barrett.
I always thought that there's this terrible promo Tyson Kidd did, like when Nexus beat up Bret Hart, and he goes.
I vaguely remember.
He's like, it sounded so just fake. He goes, when Bret Hart was screwed the first time, an argument could be made that both sides were equally at fault.
Oh, God, I remember.
So I always wanted his music to begin. An argument could be made that both sides were equally at fault.
There'll be the new Can You Dig It, Sucker.
Yes, stand back.
Like that plays, the crowd goes wild. Oh my God, it's Tyson Kidd! Oh.
Anyway, so Wade did a promo about being really good at beating people up and stuff, and I assume like all this was designed to ensure that he got the heel thing because Sheamus hasn't turned. He basically has turned face by beating so much ass in the ladder match, so. I don't even know if it was necessary, but it erased all doubt as to who the heel was tonight. It was funny, though, because Wade was just... He ran over his list of accomplishments, and his list ended at the beginning of 2011. And he was like, and then... So, mostly just the same. It was like...
He won at WrestleMania, didn't he? Or did you? No? Okay.
His list was like, I won NXT. I formed the Nexus. I brutalized John Cena, and then he just kind of trailed off. But now, are Sheamus and Wade buds, like Sheamus and are all three of them, or is it just Sheamus and McIntyre?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It could be a Celtic thing, which would eliminate Wade.
Yeah, I wasn't.
They all are. Someone will appreciate this. They are all forum buddies. They all wrestled at the Forum in Waterford.
Interesting. I thought you might have the inside scoop on this, of your compatriots and your national enemies.
Do you know who else is a Forum buddy?
Rover?
Dragon Kid and Seema and Takeshi Rikio and Big Yellow Apeoda and Kid Cash. And who else have I seen in that place? Don't think anyone else would know. Pac! They're the forum buddies.
I consider you my forum buddy, Alan.
Aw, you too, Justin.
You were on my friends list on the old board that lets you view posts by user.
I have the Doom Chicken on mine.
I missed that feature because then I could read the board as I preferred by looking at the posts of only like a dozen people, and now I have to see other shit. Anyway, so Wade and Sheamus, like, people like their SmackDown match, and, this was even better, because they had a long, proper match, I think I'm excited about the, stuff on SmackDown tonight about Sheamus staring down the big Mark Henry.
Yeah, me too.
Obstacle, and, Brian and Wade, but I think it's kind of a shame that I guess, have gone away from the Sheamus-Wade feud, because this match was really good.
They can always come back to it, sure. How did Sheamus kind of sort of make a babyface comeback, and if so, how did it look?
Yeah, had long heat, and Sheamus just seemed like a natural, like, tough, fighting babyface guy who was, like, roaring and getting fist pumped up and things like that.
Good for him.
People responded to him, and, he didn't have a proper turn, but, you know, sometimes, like with Orton, it's just like, yeah, you know what, he's good by me. And it was a good match. Like, those are, like, neither guy is super graceful, but they did a good job.
Wade's improved so much in, like, the last 3 months.
I agree, yeah.
And he's added things to his arsenal that were a lot better than things he had in his arsenal. Like, he now has, like, 4 moves that, while not their finisher, not this finisher, he still has them in supplement to his shitty finisher.
He has
the big boot, which looks awesome. He has the big boss man slam. I feel like there's something else, like a couple of other things else.
He has something out of a pump handle, right?
Oh yeah, Road Dogg style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know even why, but one of my favorite commentary calls of all time
was it a Chikara show where you have Mike Quackenbush will be doing moves, and Mike Quackenbush there will be pure, utter wrestling nerd on commentary, being like, oh, it's a Satoru Sayama style reverse arm rigger Mahistral El Torneo. There was a match, and I can't even remember who Chuck was doing commentary with, but Chuck Taylor was doing commentary, and I'm so used to hearing all Quack's calls like that in Chikara show, and someone does that move, and the other commentator goes, pump handle slam, and then Chuck Taylor just goes, road dog style. Like, that was awesome.
Good Jades night. Of the road dog, Jesse James.
Yeah, big time, big time.
Well, yeah, you would have liked this because Wade used his signature offense, and then they had reversals to like the Sheamus moves, like the apron clothesline and things like that. And they had a battle to see who could strike with the big boot first. And Wade got heat on him for a long time. There's a big "Let's go Sheamus" chant, and then Sheamused up and fought back. And then he escaped the finisher. And then he gave him the kick, and then he won. And people were like, yes, I like Sheamus, ?
Sheamus needs to watch some Tozawa tapes to look at loads of different ways to throw that pump kick. Because like, he is a nice pump kick, but there's a bunch of... Tozawa had a bunch of cool ways that he'd work into his matches, and Shed loves his... Like, there's one where, like, say the guy will be... The guy will be running at you, and you'll hit him with the pump kick, and he'll kind of shrug it off, and he'll obviously, they might not want to have a guy shrugging off Sheamus's pump kick. It's not really WWE style of work, but they shrug it off, and they go to hit the ropes again, and Sheamus kind of takes a few steps forward and meets them as they're hitting the ropes with another pump kick, and just stuff like that always pops the crowd. But
some good pump kickings of D. Bryan when they were working together.
Maybe you should get Steve Blackman in as the ultimate the pump kick.
Bateman, nice name dropping.
That would be a fine like a groupthink seminar. Steve Blackman, Akira Tozawa, and Sheamus.
Three wise men.
Oh, big time, big time. So what came up next? We're deep into the show here, like four or five matches at this stage. You got to be getting the heavy hitters.
This was the intermission main event. It was a special Raw match. Between Rey Mysterio and The Miz.
Jeez, that's actually... I was going to joke and say, like... What was it? Like, I'm trying to think of not great Raw guys and failing. Kozlov. I like Kozlov. I'm trying to think of guys I don't like. I even like Otunga these days. Is there anyone I don't like? Fuck. Did you see Otunga's and... Otunga's always kind of had the hoodie, but he comes out with the hoodie now, and... McGillicuddy has the Nexus fitted hat backwards.
Really?
Yeah, it's his entrance gear. It's like if you were playing No Mercy as Michael McGillicuddy, he'd have a fitted Nexus hat in his entrance, and you could give your creative character a fitted Nexus hat too.
And I will.
Yeah.
Because I'm not against us. I'm Nexus.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that they're the two last men standing, being pals now. Because, like, McGillicuddy and Husky were the McGilla buddies, and now they're just like...
Well, if you remember, didn't Otunga, like, and I actually didn't see the angle when this all happened in the paper. I remember missing, or not watching, the pay-per-view where it kind of went down, but I heard the recap. Wasn't something like Otunga brought in McGillicuddy and Husky?
Yeah, I don't know. That was kind of hazy. I think Otunga's plan was just to go stand at the ring, and then Wade had a Trump plan, the plan above all plans, to use them to run in, but I don't remember.
Mm.
It was one way or the other. Either Otunga had a shitty plan because his plans always sucked, and then Wade had the real plan, or Otunga had a plan and Wade was like, not bad, but cut it out.
On my Barrett.
Yeah. So, a greater purpose that none of us could ever understand. And I guess that's why I was never brought up again.
How? That's actually, you've saddened me now. I forgot about that. That was never... We never got to... Hopefully in a few years when a certain podcast will have a certain newly fired member of a certain creative team will
will know. But anyway, Miz and Rey Mysterio, how did that compare to their Raw match?
Yeah, I was watching it being like, God damn, why are these guys doing all this? And then I remembered they were probably like working out the match for Monday, and it paid off.
Oh, did they do this bouncing powerbomb thingy?
They surely did.
Sweet.
I can't remember everything that was the same, but they're like the big and complicated stuff. They didn't do any dives, I don't believe, but they did like the hot sequences. They did that thing where he dropped him in the turnbuckle and then did his clothesline, etc. They did the powerbomb, and it was really good. It was quite the supplement to the SmackDown Superstars, to throw this out there. Miz got a lot of heat doing a promo about Cleveland, who is an enemy of Pittsburgh, and he if I recall correctly, he did the really question for like more than a minute, and he would say really, and then he would hold the mic to Tony Schimmel and be like, explain, Tony, and Tony would be like, oh, and he did it to other people, the referee, and a good thing was somebody, it was mostly kids in the crowd, and but one adult came dressed up as a referee, and he was like trying to give referee signals at Scott Armstrong to communicate in referee language, and then Scott Armstrong caught sight of him and was like, hey, we both wear the stripes, and held up his stripes, and the ref was like, the fan ref was like, I too have stripes, my brother, and then Scott Armstrong flexed his muscle and pointed at it as if to say, but you don't have this.
Scott Armstrong is a great man.
So that was touching, and well, the most touching part of the evening, so Miz did a long promo, got a lot of heat, and Ray was very beloved by the children, and one kid in the front row had a sign that said, I couldn't read it exactly, but the prominent part was Ray Mysterio, spelled R-A-Y, and he was really happy to see Ray Mysterio, and so Miz went out and took the sign, and he very deliberately marched around with it for a while and looked at it and was like, who would make a sign for Rey Mysterio? That guy is not good. And then he acted like he was going to rip it up, and then he stopped. And then he ripped it up. And this kid was devastated and just started bawling in the arms of his mother. It was kind of a downer. But then Rey Mysterio went to ringside, and they had their like private conversation head-to-head. And Ray was like, "This, I will not stand for this. You will be avenged, my friend. You and me are going to do it together. Are you going to be okay?" And the kid bucked up after that. And sure enough, Ray Mysterio beat him and restored the balance of power for this little kid. And then afterwards, he went out and picked up the shattered remnants of the sign and returned him to the kid. And they got a picture together. And I was like, man, Ray Mysterio is the nicest person.
Yes, he is.
Although, I'll tell you, Alan, if Rey Mysterio did, like, German catch wrestling, he would be the worst wrestler in Hamburg Beer Hall. The worst.
Is this a reference to something from perhaps the Brian and Vinny show? Because I didn't listen to that.
I would never do that. I would never. No. The worst. Literally the worst German catch wrestler.
Worse than me?
Yep, the worst.
Wow. I'm pretty crap at German catch wrestling. It's my one weakness.
You can't trick referees into calling penalties on the babyface?
No. It's very unfortunate. No. So, anything interesting about intermission, or we move on to the ladder matches?
There was nothing interesting about intermission, but I'll talk about it. Caitlin came out to resume her contest, and she invited people in the ring for an opportunity, a championship opportunity, to meet WWE superstars backstage. And the way this she brought them into the ring was one child and three people. I'll leave it at that. And so then she sprung it on them that the The contest would be adjudicated in the form of, as comedian Rob Riggle would say, a dance contest. And this went poorly, and then the kid was like a ringer or something, because he had moves. He did, like, that roll-around-on-the-ground stuff, whatever that's called, people spinning on their backs on cardboard boxes. He had a lot of those moves. People were like, well, you're the obvious winner, through a show of applause. But then Caitlin, being a good gal, let everybody go back and meet WWE superstars. There you go. So, would you have thrown your hat into the ring, literally, to compete in a dance contest, Alan?
It would depend on the other, who my opponents in competition would be.
Good point.
If I saw people I could take, then I'd do it. And at a wrestling show, I think I'd see people I could take. But, I don't have to be no adorable kids, because that's just unfair. So yeah, coming back from intermission then, and what were you treated to?
Yeah, so I thought the thing was you're supposed to put on the shit match after intermission so people can linger at the merchandise stands, and I was once treated to like 8 20-plus minute Billy and Chuck versus Scotty Too Hotty and
Good Albert God
match. So this was not what they went with here. It was Mark Henry versus Daniel Bryan. And Daniel had the briefcase, and was like, yay, Daniel. You know, you hear the story, like the reason that Christian and Bryan both won big at Money in the Bank? It's very promising. It's like that Ed Koski guy used to be the writer on ECW and NXT.
So yeah.
He has really, really good relationships with them and sees a lot in them. And so now, when they restructured everything, he's now the head writer of SmackDown. So now he's looking up in the Christian and Daniel department.
Very good.
Very, very exciting to me.
And me.
I'm a cliched internet man. His favorite wrestlers are Christian, Daniel Bryan, and CM Punk. Can't believe it's come to that. I used to think I had integrity. I don't know.
I along with my friends, announced my Fave 5 at the Money in the Bank viewing party.
Mm.
And I will try to remember what my Fave 5 were. I know number one was Dolph Ziggler.
Hmm.
There was Dolph Ziggler, and then I forget the order of the rest, but it was the Usos, Heath Slater, Sheamus, and... forget the other one. So, yeah. Usos counted as one.
Oh, okay. They are identical.
No, Jimmy has a tattoo on his chest.
That's what I heard from Scott Stanford.
Yoshi.
That's good, but, you know, I hope they don't get complacent. They know that their position is in jeopardy every week in the Fave 5, right?
Absolutely. It's a dynamic thing.
The Bryan thing is exciting. I assume it means good things for, like, Wade and Sheamus, who they've kind of got up and running again.
Next up, Drew McIntyre.
Yeah. Well, he was never on NXT or ECW. Was he on ECW? I don't think so. Maybe like a brief ECW thing when they...
Maybe teaming with Dave Taylor against the Nasty Boys.
Yes. So, anyway, Mark Henry, who was very over, beat Daniel Bryan. It wasn't quite an epic clash, but, you know, he didn't squash him or anything. Bryan, like, fought back and kicked him a bunch and did the drop kick and his whole comeback, but then he made one wrong move and was caught in the clutches of the world's strongest slam, and that was the end of the match. And then the penultimate match, which makes sense because this is the number one contenders, Ezekiel Jackson beat Ted DiBiase to retain the Intercontinental title, and I listened to Ted's music and jammed to it, and then I went and bought popcorn.
Is the guy who sings Ted's music, and you may not have heard this because it was Battle Royal, but the guy who sings Ted's music is the same guy that sings Justin Gabriel's awesome new music?
Good question. I don't know.
I heard it is, but did the Battle Royal guys get entrance music?
They came out to the Green Day song from SmackDown.
Oh, did they? That's... Yeah, Justin's new music sounds like... the song from a FIFA game for the World Cup, the Canaan song. I believe it was like a Pepsi or a Coke ad too. It's like, when I get older, I will be stronger, etc., etc.
You should come out to Waka Waka this time forever.
Oh, so good. Those two songs define the summer of 2010.
Does he? I mean, I listen to that in the morning, and it's just like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have a great day.
I'm sure I've talked about this on the show, since I often delve into my personal life in the show. I always use songs to wake me up. I set them as an alarm on my computer, which is up beside my bed. And, often Waka Waka will be used. I used to, when I was in college and you had time to do this stuff, I used to keep track of all the songs I'd used to wake myself and gave them a rating out of 10 on how effective they were. And then I stopped when I realized the effectiveness depended far more on just how tired and sleepy I was that morning compared to the song. Although there were some that were just brutally bad, like some Brian McKnight or Lionel Richie, your Boyz II Men song is not going to get you jumping out of bed.
Is that how you built up such a big library of road tripping songs that you used in March for the shows we did together?
Very, very well could have been.
Man, because it was an impressive compendium there.
Yes.
If you're ever down, you can call me and I would tell you that you're a good soldier choosing your battles and however else it goes. Pick yourself up and dust yourself off. Get back in the saddle.
I also did the Spanish version of that song, and unlike a lot of Shakira's Spanish music, which I greatly enjoy, I didn't find the Spanish version of Waka Waka to be as good as the English version.
I always kind of prefer the Spanish ones, because then I can just assume that the lyrics are extremely profound and good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Shakira Estoy Aquí. Everyone go download that. It's a great song.
It's great.
So anyway, Shakira didn't wrestle in this show.
No,
but
not even Scott Steiner's
Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase. Oh, Jesus. Good reference, Justin.
Hey.
Nice. I only know of her because one of the few WCW magazines from the 99-2000 era that I got, which was more than 2000-2001 era, one of the few editions of that magazine which I purchased had an interview with Shakira. Like,
yeah,
Shakira, what kind of name is Shakira?
Shapiro. I think like WoW magazine devoted a lot of content to them. It would be like Madeja and Shakira.
You know what? Maybe it was in WoW magazine that I had the Shakira interview.
I don't think the WCW journalists and Chad Damiani or whoever are going to get sit down with Shakira, but I wouldn't be surprised if WoW did.
Yeah, all those magazines are on my shelf above my bed. I could check that out. But anyway.
Shakira talks, sits down with us, and we can totally see her vag. Really classy journalists over there, and WoW. Now I got Estoy Aquí in my head, and that's great.
Oh, you know Estoy Aquí? Huh?
Yo Estoy Aquí.
Justin, I love you.
You are my best friend, Alan.
Oh, tremendous.
You could tell us as well. I only know the part about Estoy Aquí.
I got a song for you, Justin.
Hit it.
I came from money. and he faced Persona Kingdom of Domination. Yeah, Domination. Brawl for All.
That's a combination of skill and concentration. So rise to the occasion. Do something amazing.
That was the music from Brawl for All.
Yeah, I heard like some old WWE, I think it was like Anthology maybe. It was just like in a folder on my computer. And so I may have been morning pump up music at some point. And then I was like, what the hell? This is Zeke's music.
Without the lyrics. And have you ever seen the video of Zeke's entrance music to the Keenan and Kel opening video?
No.
It's very funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, he should.
But yeah, Ted's music is great. I wish he would have played twice. It did not. Well, it did. It played when he won the Battle Royal. But, he lost to the torture rack. Zeke did his body slams. I assume the match was excellent. I don't know.
Let me guess the main event. Was it Randall Orton and Christian?
Yep. Finally the match we've all been waiting for, right?
You betcha.
Yeah, so Bret Hart came out first, and he was wearing a Sidney Crosby jersey, and he said nothing before the match. He just said, he just did Hitman hands to everybody, and
well, anyway.
What kind of dipshit is Bill Simmons for saying that Bret Hart's music was bad?
Did he? I didn't even really read the article. I opened it up and glanced at it, and
it ain't no good.
Yeah. I saw Jericho's number one. I was like, really? It's good, but I don't know.
It's got staying power.
Yeah, I guess.
So Bret Hart was billed in advertising as the guest referee. He was announced tonight as the special ringside enforcer, and his role in execution ended up being guy who sits in a chair and talks to Tony Schimmel during the match. So
they probably talked about hockey.
Likely, yeah.
Known hockey fans.
Christian came out and did a promo about being like the best Canadian guy, better than Crosby and Edge and Bret Hart and someone else. Maybe just them. People are like, what? Quit lying. And Orton, I gotta say, SmackDown Randy is like a revelation.
Hell yeah. Bearded Randy is a revelation.
The beard that stops right at the cheeks? Yeah.
Yeah.
You think his hair grows in that way, or does he cut it that way?
I think I pinpointed an episode of SmackDown a couple of weeks ago where I noted that the beard had definitely been groomed.
Hmm.
It started off very disheveled and rough and was definitely growing in its own way, and then there was a point where there had been some grooming going on.
Just, like, concise squares.
He once noted that he gets his hair cut every show.
I believe it. Just give him, like, the number 1.5 guard or whatever you call that. And, you know.
That'd be pretty sweet to be able to just have the same haircut all the time. It's like, all you have to do, you don't have to go out of your way. Like, I mean, the person to cut your hair is just there while you're waiting around the TV every week.
Isn't that remarkable? I mean, like, and you have a good relationship with them. Like, I struggle mightily because my haircutsman is in Oil City, and it's the only one I had in my whole life. So anytime I want a haircut, it's like, am I going to make an appointment far in advance with him 2 hours away? Or am I just going to, like, wander into Supercuts and be like, please don't ruin everything? It's a lethal lottery.
I had to get a haircut by the Russian guy that I've avoided for several years yesterday. It's this one guy who I always let cut my hair. Because we have a code where I never say anything to him, he never says anything to me, he does a great job of my haircut, and I give him a tip every Christmas. So it's a fine understanding that's gone on for at least a decade now, and unfortunately, well, not all, I wasn't giving him a tip when I was 15, God knows, but
big shot.
Yesterday, I went in there and they were like 5 minutes from closing, and like it was like sort of they're taking customers in still, but like they wouldn't be taking any more in. It was because whoever was in there was going to be the last one. So I just snuck in the end, and him and the Russian guy were both completing a haircut, and I was like, oh, please let my guy John finish first, and instantly, as I was thinking that, the Russian guy finished, and I was like, oh, it's because, like, normally I'd say, oh, I'm going to wait for John, and they don't mind you doing that. That's totally cool. But, yeah, just it was so late that I couldn't say that because like, I'm sure they wanted to get home, so I had to take the guy that was ready. And the Russian guy cut my hair, and I was like, oh, this is going to suck. I don't even know why I was. But anyway, he actually did a great job and was lovely. He asked me if the thing they put around the cloth, whatever they put around you, the cape,
the nape,
yeah, whatever it's called,
the nape cape.
He put it on. And he goes, "Is that too tight for you, sir?" I was like, no, it's perfect. Thank you for asking. It made me feel quite good about myself.
So maybe you were wrong about the
rush. I was. Like, and he did like, it's not a spectacular haircut by any means, but it's, like, not bad. It's the same haircut I always get, but it doesn't look too much different than how John usually does it, so.
There are ways to mess things up, even on a simple boy's haircut.
So oh, yeah.
Count your blessings.
Blade 3 back and side, scissors on top, take a lot off, and take a fair bit off the fringe.
Yep.
Yeah, I said all that to him, and then he inquired about how I would like my locks. And I was like, my locks? Wow. I don't know. I guess...
Shorn locks, please.
Take them up a little bit, maybe?
Wait, what are the locks? Are the locks not the fringe?
No, the locks are the things in front of your ears.
In front of... Oh, sideburns? Like.
Sideburns, yeah.
Okay. Fascinating. Now if I ever need to get my hair cut overseas, I still won't because it would be scary. And I don't have the proper currency.
So. Sideburns, I don't know if this is America too, but sideburns normally here would be very long, groomed locks, like sort of like triple H button chops things. But just like your average size length ones that go down to maybe the bottom of your ear or just sort of the middle of your ear, they're just locks.
Okay, so the part that's still part of your hair is the locks.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. I'll see if that carries over here in the colonies. Fascinating. What were we talking about?
I have no idea. No. This was meant to be a 15-minute segment.
Randy's weekly haircuts, yeah. Keeping it buzzed down. Like, when he was really the viper, when he started kicking people, I think is when his hair became too short for a human being. And it was that of a concise serial killer's short hair. Because any of you go back to, like, Evolution Randy and he has hair, it's scary. It's like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Not as scary as the times Homicide has hair. That's just...
Homicide has hair?
Homicide grew his hair out for, like, 6 months in Ring of Honor. And it was quite disturbing.
Man.
He had white guy hair.
How can that be?
Oh, I don't know. It was horrible.
Orton and Christian was a slightly lower gear version of their usual awesome match, and still worked damn hard for a house show. I think Randy is just like really motivated by being given the responsibility of the no questions asked number one dude, because he's just fired up, you know. And his freak out faces are really catching on. And
I particularly enjoyed his I nearly lost my leg face from
such a stark act of defiance, you know. You're just like, I'm Randy Orton. But no, I can't imagine him ever being like this animated back when he was on Raw just doing the Randy Orton thing.
Yeah.
He's jumping about and he's doing everything. So this is a good match, and crowd was super buzzing at the end for the near falls. And everyone started stomping on the ground when Randy was setting up the punt. And then Christian got up and slapped Scott Armstrong in the face. And Scott Armstrong was like, "How dare you? Well, you're not going to like this. You are disqualified." And Christian was like, "Don't do that, thanks." And Randy was like, "Don't do it, Scott Armstrong." And Scott was like, "As a referee, it's my obligation." And Randy was like, "Fuck." And, Bret Hart did nothing, although right before the finish, Christian tried to bring a chair into the ring, and Bret Hart kind of looked over his shoulder and just grabbed it and then went back to his conversation. So, really good match, and by house show standards, I guess. And then Randy got a bunch of garbage from under the ring and hit Christian with kendo sticks and gave him the RKO as the end of the show. And then he and Bret Hart made the perimeter and gave fives, and then that was it.
Well,
so I was glad that I went. I was disappointed by the Brett and Daniel Bryan parts, but everything else exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, sounds like a good fine show, and it doesn't sound like it had the TNA aspects of the house shows I was at recently, where they're just trying to shove the name TNA and all their shit down your throat for the whole time, and all these people
get our stuff.
Oh, God, like...
If you pay $15, beer money will touch your back.
Oh, Justin, you have no idea how just painful those TNA house shows are for me. But anyway, it's been a pleasure having you on, Justin. I suppose very quickly we'll get your some thoughts on recent current events, even though we've delved into quite a bit just in talking about this house show. But are you happy with all the punk stuff so far?
In a perfect world, I would have waited more, but I'm sympathetic to why they did what they did, based on the timetable and the fact that they put so much into them.
Is it bad that I'm just not even? I'm totally cool with the timing of him coming back, and I'm not even questioning it purely for the fact that he is cult of personality as his music. Like, I'm disregarding everything else as mattering. Just the fact that he has cult personality as his music makes it the greatest thing ever, and there's nothing wrong with this at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think
I was watching Raw on Tuesday evening, and I was tired after work, but I'd made it through pretty much all the show. It had been an eventful show, so it kept me awake the whole time. And I'll be honest, during Cena and Rey, the infamous, I guess, Cena and Rey match, which spawned a lot of controversy. And
worst awesome
match ever. I noticed like none of the stuff that was obviously talked about, but as I said, I was kind of dozing off and eyes were shutting, and towards the finish, I can't even remember what the finish was because I think I went out fully at the finish, and I just and
you
like
drafted the STFU.
I knew Cena had won. I was kind of like just sort of I rolled onto my side and I was like sort of falling asleep, and then I just hear. And you've never seen someone just spring up to life. I just sprung up. I was like, what? No way! No way! And it's like, da-da-da-da. I was like, you're fucking kidding me. Because I went on Twitter like 3 weeks ago and was like, yeah, at CM Punk, I hope you use cult of personality in this angle. He listened to me. Oh.
He took it under advisement.
Yes, he did. Fucking amazing. Did you hear the sad story about the CM Punk Macho Man podcast?
It was like corrupted or something?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not the
2 hours. 2 hours of Punk, Lars Fredrickson, Naylor, and Will talking Macho Man. And the file didn't work. And I actually would have thought I would have been able to save it. But before I made it known that I would have been able to save it, it had been deleted. So, sucks.
How do you let that happen?
I know. It sucks, definitely.
That's a collection of the all-time greats.
I know. Hopefully they said that it may happen again soon. So, or
how does it compare, do you think? How would it have compared to the intimate interview of like Bix talking to CM Punk in between sets? Did you hear that one?
Oh, yeah. That was with Naylor, too. I would think that would be better, or this would be better than the show with Bix. Bix. Going out on a limb.
Don't sleep on Bix. I said it before, I'll say it again.
I will take Lars Fredrickson and Will over Bix. Going out on a limb. Nothing against Bix. He's lovely. But I will take Lars Fredrickson over Bix.
I don't know. I don't care about ranting. Bix is the voice of my generation.
I don't have to tell you my age.
Right. Oh, yeah. So I think it would have been a lot more epic if, say, like Cena and Rey had this match at SummerSlam in L.A. and then CM Punk came out and it would have been like, holy shit, this is the requisite amount of time for this to be allowed. But considering like how much they've invested into him and like turned their entire month of July over to CM Punk, I am completely sympathetic as to why they need him for their biggest show of the half year.
Yep. As I said, I'm so simplistically looking at it. I'm doing like what CM Punk kind of asked for people to do on the Bill Simmons podcast, just kind of not overanalyze it, just watch it, see where it goes, and it's been working for me so far. It's like every bit of this angle so far I've enjoyed, so yeah, more power to it. And Justin, we'll leave it there, and thank you for joining us for a segment which went 45 minutes longer than planned, but I think it was worth it because this was a thoroughly entertaining show, even in spite of the fact that it had no mooning content. Oh, wait, hang on. Hey! Oh. There we go. Yeah.
You're what?
No one knows. Me and Justin are on video cam here.
Yep. Yeah.
Tremendous.
I don't know what to do now.
I say we go and we lead into... No, we won't lead into the Ricochet interview because I'm putting the Ricochet interview on before this. We're going to close out with this...
Whoa.
With this fine segment that we've just recorded, and we're going to lead into whatever the name of my song, Eyes as Candles. That's what it's called. Eyes as Candles. Take it away. Whatever band you are that sings that song, and everyone, join us. Join me, not on this show, but on another show on this website shortly, or soon this week, and
some kind of daily show, Alan.
Yeah, and which rolls out Adam and Mike, and join me on that, and I should be back probably next weekend with another DKP. If it's either going to be one of two shows, it's still to be determined. So yeah, everyone,
how do you figure that's going to happen?
Hey,
how long do you expect for that to go on? I also heard a rumor, not to Bigfoot the end of your show, I heard a rumor that you and me were coming back with one of our buds for an important project.
Ooh, I heard that rumor too. Sounds like people are whispering. One of our buds who is been world traveling. I don't think he knows yet that he's coming, but he'll know soon enough. Justin, thank you. Everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this huge show. This has been one of our longest shows in a while, for sure. Even though I haven't taped the Ricochet interview yet, so if that goes 2 minutes, then disregard the last comment. Thanks everyone for listening, and stay tuned for shows we got upcoming. Bye!
Put your pants on, Alan.
I will. Later.